Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jack weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big basketball show. Good to have you with us on this March Madness Super Tuesday special. As we start our next NBA report, but we know that at this time of the year, we also segue to another exciting form of basketball known as the NCAA basketball, men's basketball national tournament. And with that come the conference tournaments for each of the conferences throughout the land. And they're going to start tomorrow, Wednesday during the day, and then continue into the weekend, and then the bigger conferences will start their tournaments the week after that, and then the week after that, we get into the big national NCAA tournament. So there's a lot to talk about there. Wide open, no dominant team, no team to beat at all. Any of five teams could do it. It's going to be an exciting time, and I'm going to hope to find someone to come on with me to talk about some of the college basketball scenarios in the weeks ahead. And I did a terrible job last year not formulating that, but whether it's Chris in Syracuse or John in Connecticut, I should have somebody to break down the NCAA scenarios too. But tonight, we're going to stick with the pros, and a lot going on, including some beef between two of the biggest stars in the NBA. Let's jump it. The NBA report for March 3rd. That's right, you heard it. James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo are having a real war of words lately as the two of them start to really criticize each other's skill sets. We're going to get into that and a whole lot of stuff. We're going to stay with the Rockets, too, because the small lineup that the Rockets have been using since the trade deadline is working. They really didn't have slip until last night when they lost to the Knicks at the Garden. But while the Knicks could be celebrating that fact, instead they're mired in their own controversy regarding Spike Lee getting kicked out of the game or not being allowed into the right entrance. It's just like, wow, guys, the Knicks cannot get out of their own way even after a big win like that. So let's bring in our co-host Chris in Georgia on this very busy night. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Dave. Good. How are you?
Oh, good, good, good. And we're starting a little late tonight. I just got back from the polls voting, trying to get myself organized here, but we did get the vote in as we have the presidential primaries tonight. I mean, I got to be honest, I should have probably gone. I'm like Mike, I didn't do enough research going into this, but I did the best I could, and I hopefully voted with honor there. And so we'll see how that one goes. Anyway, to basketball. And there certainly are teams we got to talk about making their run to the playoff seeds. There are teams we can talk about who are just lapping up the top of the standings. And we did have some unlikely upset losses yesterday. Really big ones. But I think it would be an appropriate time to start with the beef between Giannis and Harden. I mean, these two guys seem to be really straight and smack with one another. And the biggest example was last week when James Harden sat down with Rachel Nichols and called out Giannis Antetokounmpo's lack of skills. And he said, "I wish I could be 7 foot tall and just dunk all the time. It doesn't take much skill to do that." Basically, some effect, that's what he said. And then he added, "You know, I had to learn how to play basketball in order to be as good as he is." And, you know, those are some strong words. I don't know if we necessarily agree with that, but James Harden, I think, has had enough of all the criticism about him, about how he's, you know, he's tough to watch, da da da. And I'm not saying he isn't tough to watch. We both have established that we think he's tough to watch. But to not call him skilled is probably a little silly. And I think that's where the whole thing began, because Giannis was dissing him during the All-Star selection process. And so Harden, being goaded essentially by Rachel Nichols at being asked about that moment, came out with that comment. And he said that he doesn't care about that stuff, only to bring up that he was top 10 in assists. So clearly, he doesn't, he's not being completely genuous with that response. But nevertheless, he stood up for himself. And I think I got to give him a little credit for that, even though I think he was over the top in saying that Giannis had no skill. I mean, I don't think it's that simple, but it certainly has started a real beef, and I like it. I think that the NBA could use a little personal rivalry, and it should be a lot of fun. So, Chris, I know that that all kind of went down quickly. What did you think about this entire beef to start our program tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see both sides of it, but I feel like Harden's a little too thin-skinned about this one. I don't know. I did not see the interview with Rachel Nichols, but yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, just kind of laugh it off and like be like, you know, I won an MVP. You know, my team's, I mean, every year he's a MVP finalist. He will be this year. I mean, Giannis is going to probably edge him out. And maybe that's where this is coming from too. It's just that these are maybe the top two guys in voting at the end of the season. And then, the other thing too is just, I mean, yeah, you gotta laugh it off. You gotta shrug it off. I mean, maybe Giannis starts, you know, taking the step back dunk and he starts pulling the fletch. That would be good. I mean, you know, just to show that he has some skills. You know, just he'll go in for a layup and then gets fouled and does the arm flailing thing that Harden has perfected, and then maybe there'll be some respect coming from the other side too. I don't know. It's kind of funny. I do agree though. It is good for basketball because sometimes maybe basketball gets a little too chummy. But so it's good to see some real beef, as you call it, going both ways there. So that was good.
Yeah, I really would love to spend more time on this, but I know that's not that's probably going to be covered by the other shows. So why don't we go on this tangent? You mentioned the MVP. Do you feel like there's going to be any challenge to Giannis Antetokounmpo's MVP hopes at this point of the season?
No, I feel like he's got it locked up, don't you? I think he's, you know, he's actually a better player than he was last year when he won it.
Yeah.
Although the NBA MVP is weird. They do weird things like somehow LeBron never is a finalist anymore. I mean, I don't know. I think he'll definitely win it. I think Harden's probably the biggest challenger. I mean, but it's always a strange scenario for me, like the MVP, because one, like I said, you know, like elite guys are just never get close to the trophy after a certain, I mean, there'll be a point where Giannis won't, you know, he'll still be great and he won't sniff the MVP. And then two, it's just, I feel like you kind of forget who wins it year to year. I mean, it makes so little impact on me because they announced it during the playoffs. Right. And then, you know, you're just kind of into the playoffs and you're not even thinking about it. And it's a regular season award. And then you just kind of forget who wins year to year. I mean, I know. There are the controversial years that you remember.
Like, oh yeah.
Westbrook and Harden and all that. But I mean, you know, if I had to go back the last 10 years, I'd probably get them all wrong. So,
well, I remember very well how Kobe single-handedly carried the Lakers in the mid-2000s, and he would get ousted every time by Steve Nash, who had a team loaded. I always thought that was a disgrace back in those days. And he definitely – Kobe should have had at least one in that whole three-year run, because there was nobody on that team that was anywhere near his ability in those days. So that always surprised me as well.
No, that's a good example. Kobe, yeah. Did Nash win it more than once? I can't remember.
He won it two times, like both years. And it's like, Are you kidding me? Like, I'll look it up just to confirm, but it was definitely 2006 he won it.
Yeah.
So now you also mentioned that they used to announce it during the playoffs. That's not the case anymore because they invented the NBA awards.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. It's a week after the finals. Yeah. That's right. My
Which
bad.
Makes
yeah.
that even.
Did you watch that? Did you watch? You watched it this year? I did not.
I don't remember if I watched the whole thing. I may have watched some of it, but. But the point of but what that says is the point of that of me bringing that up is that it makes the you know the perspective of what somebody winning that award even weirder because what happens if the team loses in the first round and you forget all about them for a month as the rest of the playoffs goes on then at the end of the season after some other team wins the championship they announce this award then they gave it to Harden and it's like oh well obviously that mattered in the playoffs but. But you know what I mean? Like that even makes it stranger context, I think, to have the award at the end of the entire postseason as well.
Yeah, I did not tune in for that show. Mm-hmm. Probably should. Maybe next year I'll watch it. Isn't it out in L.A.? Where do they do it?
Yeah, well, up to now they had been doing it at this hangar, just buried in secrecy at the Santa Monica Airport. They don't even tell you that, but that's where it is. It's like right in the... Right as you go south on Satinala or Bundy, whichever one it is, and it's just kind of buried there, and that's where they do it. And so they're on this little hangar, and they set up the award show. I don't know where they're going to do it this year, but it's certainly they get everybody to they usually get a lot of people to show up for it. So we can comment about that later. I have mixed feelings about the idea of doing an award show that late in the season. It's like. Just right at the end of the regular season. Like, it seems like the most appropriate time to do it, but they always had an odd way of doing it. And I used to love, like, when a guy was on a roll. Like, Shaq is a good example, 2000. He won, and Iverson, too, the next year, where they both won their respective MVP awards in the middle of the playoffs, and they're in the semis. And then they could come to the home to the crowd, and, like, they'd be in the middle. You know, they'd have a home game in the playoffs, and the crowd would give him a big rousing ovation, and Stern would be there to hand the... MVP award trophy to the person. I mean, that was great. Like, I missed that so much. That was such a cool visual. It was great when Iverson got it. It was great when Shaq got it. It's been great when other people have had it. And that's the part of the NBA that I'm going to miss until they bring that back.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can kind of see the standpoint of, you know, kind of extending the season. The NBA has done really well having that great off season where you go from the finals to straight into really free agency and then the draft. I have that backwards, right? It's the draft and free agency. And, I think it's a good idea to have this like its own event. You can have people showing up who are, you know, the players can kind of appear and it's like kind of a red carpet kind of deal. I don't know. Maybe that's my basketball night off, I guess. And I haven't tuned in.
No, it's totally fair. It's like, you know, by the time the season's over, you're kind of like, you've kind of moved on mentally from it too. That's sort of my feeling. But I did watch some of it either last year or the year before. I did find it really funny when, Dwayne Casey won this might have been 2 years ago when Dwayne Casey won the Coach of the Year award after he was fired from the Raptors.
That's right. Yeah. He was fired the day before. In fact.
That's funny.
Cause it was like, it was a day or two before. And then they announced him Coach of the Year.
I can't remember if he was there to accept the award. That's what's so funny about that. I would have, there would have been some speech. I can't remember that.
Well, you know, he landed on his feet. He did okay.
He's in Detroit now, right? So,
yep.
I saw him in the building actually last weekend. I was in Phoenix and saw the Suns, so that was fun. I was kind of watching the Pistons give him a game actually, but I don't know. That's not relevant. We'll get to that another time.
Okay.
But staying with the Rockets, so the Rockets came into Madison Square Garden last night and they lost. Now they did make a big run, but they still lost by 2 points. And it really was something. I was like, I guess I'm not that disappointed at it because they were on such a big roll. They beat the Lakers. they won a bunch of games with this small lineup, nobody over 6'7". But they lost to New York, and I think by then you were like, well, they've already won so many games, they're due to slip up somewhere, so I can't really kill them there. But you saw the game last night. I was not able to. What were the keys to the Knicks' victory? I did catch one. There was one key where the ESPN ticker noted that the rebounding advantage was enormous. There was a huge differential in rebounding, and usually that means that the team just wasn't bringing it with the energy, and the Knicks were. So, but other than that, what did you see from that game last night?
Yeah, I didn't watch the entire thing. I just turned it on in the fourth quarter, and the Rockets had been down and were kind of coming back into it. So it was exciting when I tuned in. But yeah, the rebounding advantage was huge. Knicks played great D down the stretch, and they had it was funny because I think they were up, I can't remember if they're up three, and Houston fouled them, and the announcers were making it such a big deal because I think they fouled Tilkina, and the announcers were making such a big deal about how the Knicks didn't have free throw shooters on the floor, like guys who could actually convert a free throw at the end of a game. But the Knicks held on, and it was exciting. I'll tell you, the thing that's opened my eyes about Houston, just because I've seen them a bunch of times. I watched last night's game, and I watched them beat the Celtics twice. I did not see the LA game that you described. But, yeah, since the trade deadline, when they pulled off that massive trade with Capella going out and Covington coming in, they're 7-3, including last night's loss. And, what surprised me about them was, one, how effective they are at playing defense in the paint for a small team. And they somehow are able to, like, with P.J. Tucker, just kind of keep guys out of the paint, and they're effective at double teaming when someone brings the ball down low. And so that's one thing. The other thing is that the rebounding really hadn't been a factor until last night, and they've done really well on the glass. And last night's game was surprising. You cut them some slack, though, because they've had some big wins, and it was the second night of a back-to-back. That's not true.
No, because the last game was at the Celtics on Saturday.
Yeah, it was the Celtics game on Saturday. You're right. And they don't play again until tomorrow. So they have, they have a nice little break. So maybe this is I know it's not a day game, but maybe this is the team's going to New York with a day off, maybe partying too much kind of theory.
Yeah.
Going into play where, they were living it up a little too much in the Big Apple. I don't know, but
there's something to that. And there was a lot of that last night. Did you notice that the Bucks look so bad at Miami? That's probably a better case of that situation. And I got to give credit to Chris Vernon for pointing this out from the very beginning. He did not specify day game, apparently. He said
I thought it was day game. Okay.
It could be night game, too. And I'm like, well, certainly that explains the Bucks, because the Bucks got their butt kicked pretty hard. But more importantly, Giannis looked feeble. He did not look like he did not have any offense. He had his lowest point total of the season. I think it was 15 points, which is pretty bad for him because he'd been averaging 30, like close to 35. So he did not look like – he didn't look good at all. And the rest of the team was not able to put together the points. And for a team in Miami that had really been struggling in the last couple of weeks, they've turned it around a good amount in the last few games. They beat Dallas, good win, and this game, very good win against the Bucks. But you know what? I mean, I think that had a lot to do with it, right?
That was a back-to-backer. That was game two, because they played in Charlotte the night before. So That, I mean, I would love to see stats. I don't know where I can find this on winning percentage in the second game of a back-to-back, and then even like to split it up even further, winning percentage second night back-to-backer on the road. You know, because I think that you'd find it even lower and even more. You know, just I mean, teams would have a much more difficult time winning in that kind of scenario. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did not watch that game. You were watching. I had the Rockets Knicks game on, so I didn't see that. But you know, credit to Miami. That's a big win. I mean, yeah. Look, I mean the they've lost 9 games this year. So
yeah.
So that's you know the anytime you can beat them, you take it and good job by Miami because Miami's had a really rough stretch, particularly since the All-Star break. I'll have to pull up their record, but they've been, since the trade deadline, which was like February 5th, if I'm not mistaken, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 losses. They're like 5-7 in those in like 12 games since they pulled off that trade. Where they got Iguodala, so they've had a rough time, and last night they really needed that victory at home against Milwaukee because I believe Boston lost tonight, but I believe they're like 3 games behind Boston in the standings for the 3 seed right now.
It was an important weekend for Miami, and I think that was big. We'll see if that carries over because that was going to be a topic on the show, but they really picked it up. And I think at the end of the day, what I see from them is their defense continues to be pretty good. They played great defense yesterday. That was a very big effort. They needed a big game and they got it. So credit to Bam in particular for leading the charge on the defensive end. It was really good. Let's go back to the Rockets. There's actually one more weird loss, and I think you know what it is. What the heck happened with the Hawks? I mean, they just got trashed by a really depleted Memphis team. I do want to talk about that, but since the game is relatively relatively Sheeran compared to the other two, let's save that one for the end. But seriously, were you surprised at that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the Grizzlies were going to go into a tailspin when they lost Jaren Jackson Jr. I'll have to pull up their record. Yeah. But they had that big win against Los Angeles. That game was in L.A., right?
Were we talking about – no, that game was in Memphis. You're talking about Saturday's game. That game was in –
It was in Memphis?
That was in Memphis, yeah.
I did not expect them to win that game. And then the Hawks game, I did not see – I had to turn it off because it was like 20 points in the third quarter when I turned it on, and I could not sit through that. But they had lost 5 straight before that Lakers game, and I think that coincided with the Triple J. I think he's out for the season. I'll have to double check in his injury, but. But yeah, I thought for sure they were going to go in the tank. I considered going to the game last night. I'm really glad I didn't, just because who wants to see a 127-88 final? I mean, that's no fun for anybody. And so I was surprised. The Hawks. You never say, oh, they've got this one in the bag. But I thought it would be competitive. I didn't think they were going to lose by over 30 points. That was a bit of a surprise for me.
Yeah, I think the effort of the Hawks was called out in a big way by not only the coach but the media after the game. I mean, I don't really understand how you could go about yourself and looking yourself in the mirror, putting up that little effort on a game like that. Like, they had nobody. Wasn't Josh Jackson wasn't there some other guy that was hurt too? No, I guess maybe he was all right, but that was pretty bad losing like that at home to a team with that few players on the court.
And just fact checking, Jaren Jackson Jr. has a knee injury, but he's going to be reevaluated in a few weeks. So he will be back, but, um, But yeah, that's no, you're right. I mean, that's a bad loss at home, and yeah. one the Hawks. I mean, at least should have been in the game. That's pretty embarrassing. Yeah, the other injury you're referencing too is Brandon Clark, who's been an outstanding rookie for them, one of the top rookies this year. So they've had they've gotten a lot of minutes out of two good looking rookies, obviously Ja and then Brandon Clark. So things are looking up for the Grizz, man. I mean, they're going to be in the playoff hunt again next year, and they can still hold on. I got to look at the standings right now, but they can still hold on to that. They're still locked in the eighth seed. They're one game under 500, 30-31.
Yeah.
And they have a, they have a, a 2.5 game lead over the Blazers, but Tankathon, last time we talked, Tankathon had them with the most difficult schedule in the remainder of the season. That was right after the All-Star break, Dave. So if we look now, I'm just pulling it up, and I imagine it's still pretty tough. Their strength of schedule is third worst now because they got that Laker game out of the way, which I imagine inflated it quite a bit. So they're okay, but they're gonna be tested down the stretch if they can hold on to this playoff seed. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. And also the interesting thing too, I guess, and I didn't see the game, but the Laker game against Memphis was LeBron really. I guess he's really bonded with Ja. It sounds like he had really nice things to say about him, and I guess they're friends off the court, which is kind of interesting.
That was really cool to see that. I think he had glowing words for Ja, and he even extended that to say that the league is in good hands with guys like Ja and Zion leading the way. That's a really cool comment and very classy thing to say, honestly.
It's so funny, too, because I think about LeBron, and I feel like it was yesterday that we were watching this kid play, high school games in Dayton.
Yeah.
And
I think you mean Akron? Saying, oh, wait, is it Dayton or Akron? I thought
it was Akron. But my point is that I feel like it wasn't that long ago. And now all of a sudden, he's taken on this elder statesman role. I mean, he's still awesome, don't get me wrong, but he's kind of at this point where he's taking guys under his wing on other teams and he's talking them up on Instagram. And, Ja's one example. I mean, he had some really nice things to say about Jason Tatum recently. I don't know. He's kind of like this this elder statesman is the only way I can describe it. And I'm trying to think Jordan wasn't this way, Jordan was always still kind of edgy, And LeBron is, I don't know. I'm impressed with how he carries himself. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I think his respect for the game and his respect for other players in the game can be very much appreciated, especially now in his older age. And I think your other point that you were making with that is how fast the time has flown by, and it really has. It's amazing.
It has. I mean, I can't believe it. He's 36.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the 2003 draft, the one with Carmelo and Darko and Dwayne Wade. And it's if you look at that draft, almost all those guys were gone. No, right. I mean, Melo's still playing, obviously, but Dwayne Wade retired. It's incredible how he still kind of chokes along and still great. I'm just generally impressed with the guy. As someone who never played for my team, I still consider myself a fan of LeBron just because of his excellence and how he's just kind of he's kind of a steward for the game. He really is. And I imagine it'll be interesting to see when he does retire, whenever that is. I imagine he'll probably stay active. If his kids happen to be playing in the NBA or whatever, even if not, he just seems to love the game so much and love the young talent. So it'll be exciting to see.
Yeah, I think he will stay involved. I'm with you on that. We're going to step it back a bit again, back to what we were talking about for over the weekend. This wound up being a big weekend for the Grizzlies. If you're talking about them making the playoffs, I don't know if you really if they even want to make the playoffs. Like, this is not. I don't think all those guys are going to get better in a month. So it's a little tricky. This is a little tricky. I am very, very curious as to how that's going to end. But with those two wins, the one against Atlanta and the one against the Lakers, they have major inside track. That was a brutal weekend for New Orleans, too, because they needed the Grizzlies to lose those games, and they ended up winning both. And then the Pelicans needed to beat the Lakers. It was close, but they couldn't get it done. The Lakers were on a back-to-back. This tends to happen with the Lakers. Like, when they go on the road, if they have a back-to-back, sometimes what they do is they take their foot off the gas for the first game and pour it in for the second game. And I think that made sense here because I think they were really excited to play the Pelicans, especially with all the hoopla surrounding Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson and all the other former Lakers on the team, Josh Hart, for example. And it's very interesting. And Lonzo Ball, too.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah, no. This is the game in New Orleans you're talking about now, right?
Yeah. This is the game in New Orleans. Sunday? And it was the day after that the Lakers lost by 100 points to to the Grizzlies. So.
Yeah.
The Pelicans really got no bounces. They got no bounces from any of that. They had three scenarios they needed to get right, and they got none of them right. They didn't get the Grizzlies win in either of two instances, and then they lost their own game against the Lakers.
Yeah, and that was without AD, too, which is, you know, I thought it would be a better game. I just thought it would be a much better game than it turned out to be, but I felt like, LeBron would just get to the rim at will. I mean, they had nobody. I mean, not that.
Well, that was true in the previous game when they were at Staples Center. Drew Holiday got embarrassed by LeBron. He just pushed him around the entire game in the paint.
I guess the best bet is Zion ultimately would fill that role because Ingram is the guy I'm like most disappointed with. He looks lost on defense sometimes. And, I don't even know what the next move is. Cause they've got some tough decisions to make, even though they have all those draft picks. Ingram's a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
What's that?
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, they're tough decisions because you've got guys on that team who have a reputation for being bad defenders. And I think your points on Brandon Ingram are very, very solid. And it really illustrates why the Lakers used to be such a bad defensive team. These guys just weren't good at defense. Hart wasn't a great defender. Redick was on that. Redick, at least at the beginning of the season, he was on the Pelicans too. And I don't remember if he was a great defender either. So
no. Redick, they need Redick back because they don't have that guy to take the big shot. I mean, defenses aside, they need his shooting.
Right, right. That's true. Because it opens up the floor if he was able, he has a dependable outside shooter. Very good point. Yeah.
But what do you think of Zion? I mean, he had his career high. I think he had 35 points on 16 shots. He looked great. I mean, from what I've seen, he just seems to get better.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's a very fun player to watch, and I got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, he's a big guy. He's like Shaq, but just shorter. Like instead of being 7'3", he's like 6'4", I think is, and he's able to move in this much the same manner. And it is really interesting to watch. You just worry about whether he can sustain that kind of movement with such a big body. But if you're talking about about the other night, he was tremendous, and I just think there can be only nothing but good things if he just keeps working hard at his game, which he seems to be doing. Footwork is just one of the most impressive things about him. He does everything. Like his ability to get from the 3-point line to the basket. Now I can't speak to whether he did that. I was, to be fair, to be completely honest, I was listening to it on radio, but I can go by the previous matchup and. Dude can move, man. He's so good. And so I just imagine he was doing more of the same. And not that bad a shooter, right? Like, he can shoot the three sometimes, and He's decent with shots inside the arc too. No, I'm with it. I thought he was good. I think he's been good all year. Good passer. Would you say he's a good defender? Because that was one thing that he was really good at with at Duke too.
I think he's a good passer. He's a good passer. I had to look up his. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I had to look up his 3-point percentage. 41.7%.
That's
very small sample size, and he's not shooting a ton. He's not I don't think he's ever going to be a volume shooter, but he has that in his back pocket. You know, he can make that shot.
Yeah.
And it's your point, man. He's such a good athlete. It's freakish. I mean, we haven't seen anybody like this. I mean, I almost feel like he's kind of like Barkley in that he's just Barkley came to the league. People kind of ridiculed him because his weight and all that. Mm-hmm. And he was such a good rebounder for a guy who was relatively small. I mean, Zion's. I think
he was the same height, 6'4", right?
Yeah. Is Zion only 6'4"? I thought he's taller than that.
Let me check on. Well, I can. Okay, Barkley was 6'6".
I thought he was. He's 6'6".
Yeah, so Barkley's 6'6". And now
Barkley
Zion
was.
Let me see.
Barkley was shorter than 6'6", though. I mean,
you don't think that was accurate?
Yeah, I don't. No way.
Well, if you think that, then Zion's probably the same height because he's also listed as 6'6".
Yeah, I know. But I never thought Barkley was that tall. And he won the rebounding title one year, mm-hmm. which was incredible.
That's true.
But he does remind me a little bit of Barkley in a way. On the defensive end, though, he has that ability to block a shot and just kind of make this leap out of nowhere. And I've seen that a few times where he's just, you know, a guy feels very comfortable pulling up, and he all of a sudden he's swatting it. And so he can be fun to watch on both ends. I don't know. I mean, it's just they're gonna be a treat. I just hope he stays healthy. I want him to be healthy and kind of stay with that team for a while, if they, you know, stay in New Orleans or not. I mean, I just want to see him kind of like, you know, sort of build his legend with that one team.
Yeah, I think if he can spend a good 5 years or more with New Orleans, it's going to be a great time for the NBA, because I think he can really build something in the Crescent City? So
Crescent City.
Yeah, that'd be a good brand builder. So at any rate, let's circle back to some more things. Back to the Rockets again, because losing to the Knicks should have been a big story in New York. That should have been the Knicks beat the Rockets, who were just winning every game. But it was not the story of the day the next morning, because Dolan can't get out of his own way. And I don't know what the heck the point of this was, but they're giving Spike Lee a hard time going into the quote-unquote employee entrance at Madison Square Garden. And Spike immediately called shenanigans on this on First Take on Tuesday morning, saying that saying that this is the same entrance he used for his 28 years being a season ticket holder at the Garden for Knicks games. So who are you going to believe here, Chris? You're going to believe Dolan, who claims that, hey, he's trying to use some entrance that's different from all the other celebrities? Or are you going to believe Spike, who is saying that Dolan trying to get on him came out of the blue? It's just the most bizarre thing.
It really is. And it's, to me, it's like so avoidable. It's like, who cares? I mean, Spike Lee wants to go in that entrance, and he's done it for, you know, decades. Why is this a problem now all of a sudden? And my attitude is like, when I think about the Knicks and think about Madison Square Garden, especially in, you know, the last 20 years, which have been really lean years, you kind of think about it, it's sort of a place to be seen. And you have guys who are like fans, but it's like, it's part of the brand of the Knicks. It's like, you look around, there's Woody Allen and, you know, John McEnroe and Howard Stern and Spike Lee. And the most prominent guy in that group is Spike Lee,
yep.
And especially now that Woody Allen's popularity is nosedive. and he's absolutely 100% one of the most loyal people to the Knicks. I mean, he's there every game.
Yep.
He's, I mean, just a diehard Knicks fan. Why would you mess with this guy? You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's just, it's so crazy. The Knicks are just such a bad franchise. And so, yeah, it's totally avoidable. It's, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm watching, you know, I'm constantly putting on fights between an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I feel like this is kind of on that level. You know, I'm getting in the way of two children who were, you know, are fighting over nonsense. So I tend to side with Spike on this one. I just think the Knicks are a joke, though. And I don't know. It kind of overshadowed their win last night. Yeah. And R.J. Barrett looked good. That was the other thing I was going to bring up. R.J. Barrett has put up some nice numbers in the last 2 weeks. He's kind of come together. So, yeah, it's really unfortunate. And I don't know. What are your thoughts? I mean, can you imagine if, like, the Lakers did it with Nicholson? Like,
yeah, I was just going to say that.
To me, it's like that level, isn't it?
It is exactly on that level. Like, to do that with Jack would be absurd. Like, you have to be a damn fool to even attempt that with Jack.
It's dull, you know?
It really is. I just don't understand. I mean, the timing of that just could not be worse. I'm just like, Dolan, get over yourself. I mean, seriously. You can't make it up with this guy. Speaking of Dolan, he's trying. I think he and Clippers owner Steve Ballmer are trying to negotiate a scenario where they can either organize or not organize a Clippers buyout of the Forum in order to establish a new building in the same vicinity. And I know I understand the impetus for that, because if you try to just build the building next to Madison Square, I mean, next to the Forum, well, Dolan's not going to love that because there's competition. So Ballmer's like, let me just buy it. Let me just buy the building and you can be off your hands. Dolan's not going to go down quietly with this transaction. So I'm reading about this. It appears that Ballmer is getting closer to making this happen. He's wanted to put the Clippers down there in Inglewood for a while. I think this is my own speculation. The reason why I think he wants to go to Inglewood is because the Clippers training center is in Playa del Rey, which is not too far from there. Like, if you go a little bit to the west, you're in Westchester, and then a little further that way, you're kind of around Mar Vista, a little farther north, and Playa would be maybe a little farther south, so it's pretty close. Playa del Rey and Marina del Rey are pretty close to one another. So line of longitude appears to be pretty closely knit with where the Forum is. The Forum is just to the east of where LAX is, and just to the west of where just to the west and a little north of where LAX is happens to be Playa del Rey. So that is the idea. They can have that all centralized on the west side and convenient access to one another. And so it makes sense. Like, he can build a brand there. Maybe Steve Ballmer lives closer to there anyway. Maybe it's just more convenient for him. There's a lot going on, but that is the latest on that situation. And it seems like they're going to organize a deal. I don't know how much of a factor Dolan is going to be in making it happen or not making it happen. He could just get in the way, as he tends to do with a lot of stuff, as we just talked about. But Ballmer will not make the Forum into the Clippers' new stadium. That's not the idea. The idea is just to build a stadium next to it so the Clippers can play in this new building, which I can imagine would be smaller. I don't think it would be as big as Staples Center. And would that seem redundant? Yeah, but since the Forum is specifically designed for concerts now, I don't think it'll be a problem. So what are your thoughts on all of this? I think they can work this out, even though Dolan is being a boob in most cases. He may not be as big a boob here, and he may let it happen. Maybe there's some kickback. Maybe he gets a cash windfall from the transaction. So it could be a win-win for both sides. So I think it would be very interesting to see the Clippers in their own building. I'd be very curious to see what the attendance would be in a situation like that. But why not give Ballmer the chance. So let's get your take on it.
Yeah, I've never been to the Forum, but to me, it's such an iconic building. I mean, just architecturally, and I just have a lot of nostalgia for seeing that on CBS, you know, and you know, the NBA, then the finals would start, and you see the Forum, and it's kind of a beautiful building in a way that modern arenas aren't anymore, you know. It's kind of a shame that that it's out of the rotation now. I mean, I guess my first thought is like, look, the Clippers getting out of Staples would be good for them. And I don't know. I didn't know about all the, you know, the practice facilities and so forth. But just getting out of Staples Center, I think would be good for them, because it's sharing a building with the Lakers. It just kind of reinforces the, you know, the little brother kind of nature of, you know, the Clippers have towards the Lakers. And I don't know. I mean, would it be weird if they're playing in that old, not that they would be playing in the Forum, but playing in that neighborhood that the Lakers kind of was, that was their home turf for so many titles. I don't know how that would impact, you know, the thinking of LA. Is it kind of a jab at the Lakers? I don't know. Maybe
no,
not.
I don't. I don't really see it that way. I mean, it's been 20 years since they played at the Forum,
right?
And they don't even play basketball there anymore.
Right.
I don't really see that as much as I. Maybe if it was like 10 years earlier, I might have seen that. But so I don't. I'm not really seeing that as a specific attempt to undermine the Lakers. Besides, the Lakers practice facility is not far from the Clippers either. It's in El Segundo, which is a further, just basically south of the airport. So I don't know about that. I honestly don't know why they specified that area, but I don't believe it was specific to trying to, you know, it was not specific to trying to undercut the Lakers. I will add a point here that the Clippers released, and I'm reading it now. The Clippers continue to pursue plans to build a state-of-the-art 18,000-seat basketball arena. So I stand corrected. It will be just as big as Staples Center, and that will be fascinating to see in context with both the Forum and SoFi Stadium, which will be the new home of the Rams and the Chargers in the NFL. So that's going to be quite a scene there down there if things go according to plan for Ballmer.
So that's a ton of development. And that area, like, I don't know it that well. I mean, you can kind of fill me in and give me a little color on that. But it seems like what I remember is that it's kind of north of Compton. I mean, in the 80s, I remember it wasn't, like, I passed by it on the 405 from the airport, but it wasn't always, like, the greatest neighborhood. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's totally gentrified now and it's different. But it seems like, if it isn't gentrified, it will be. I don't know.
It's kind of a shame in a certain way, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with two sports complexes going up there, that's quite a bit of work that's, a bit of development that's going on there, and it seems like people would be uprooted. I don't know, but you have a much clearer picture on that.
Let's break that down. The Rams Stadium takes the place of what used to be Hollywood Park. There used to be a racetrack there. It was a big amount of space. So a lot of it was just that. There were some other area parcels of land that were purchased adjacent to that area. So yes, people probably did get uprooted in that scenario, which I hate that stuff. But it probably wasn't that much. I don't know what the situation's going to be if the Clippers pursue the continued development of the area around the Forum, which again is pretty close to where SoFi Stadium is. So that is going to be a really fascinating visual. I don't know if Kroenke is going to have a problem with that either, because that's kind of getting close to his neighborhood now. That's a great question. I'm not really keen on exactly what the impact would be in terms of displacement, which, you know, there's already major problems with homelessness in the LA area right now. So that would only make that worse. But assuming that that's not, there's less of an impact to that effect, maybe that works out fine. And besides, it provides jobs too, because the construction of the building is going to provide jobs, and then the staffing of the building later will provide additional jobs too. So yeah, that's something to be considered. There are community groups who seem to be opposed to the development. This is not a surprise. I mean, I think whenever something like this is proposed, community groups will be opposed to it. And one of them is named Irate, Inglewood Residents Against Takings and Evictions. So you kind of called this on that one. But it says here that it's an organization bankrolled in part by Madison Square Garden. That is funny. So
it's what do they call it? AstroTurf, not grassroots, AstroTurf roots or whatever they call that. Because it's like fake grassroots. You ever hear that term?
Now, you might have a point. Maybe it's a community group that it's a group organized by Dolan disguised as a community group.
Yeah. It's like a fake grassroots organization. Interesting. Wow.
That is funny.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say it reminds me of a George Costanza's Human Fund where he just made it up.
Oh man, Dolan, what a clown. So, but what is the deal with the Forum itself now? You said it's a music venue.
Yes.
100%.
100%.
It's an old building. There's no way that they could actually renovate that, give it all the modern amenities
They did, but they renovated specifically to be used as a concert venue, which is not as difficult. I think when you talk about a sports venue, that's a lot more work. Yeah. And as you said, it's just not even worth it at that point. It's not big enough. Like it only seated 17,505 during the old days before Great Western stopped using it and the Lakers moved out. So it's not like you could even fit that many people in there, especially if you wanted to add like an entire row, like an entire level of like premium seats and luxury suites. You know,
it would be tough. Yeah, it's a different game from the Magic and Michael Cooper and Kareem years. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just have to step up your game in terms of luxury seating with any stadium that you build in the modern age. And that's just the reality of it. And I think if you can't meet those qualifications, then you got to come up with a bigger building. So it was important to determine whether Ballmer was going to attempt to do that or just build another building. And it sounds like here he's just going to build another building.
Makes sense. Man, that's going to be weird though. Having two indoor venues like side by side. I don't know. I mean,
it could be done. I mean, I have long wondered about that. Like, would the redundancy of having two stadia of relatively similar size be a problem for a lot? First of all, traffic. Car traffic, which already sucks, but it would be even worse if you had another building like that in the area. You know, how would you organize the logistics of that? I don't know. That's a great question. Would they be able to staff, but would they be able to put both buildings in operation year round when you have two facilities so close to one another? I really don't know. It's one thing if you had, for example, like the Felt Forum and the Garden, which are in close proximity to one another. But the Felt Forum is not 17,000 seats. It's like 2,000 seats.
Yeah.
So
I think it's more than that, but yeah.
Oh, it's more than that? Okay, well.
I think so, yeah. My sister's high school graduation was there. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there had to be more than 2,000 for that. But it's in that ballpark, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
so.
I guess you just don't schedule. You would consciously not schedule. I don't know. Again, I don't know the lay of the land, but you would just not schedule a Clippers game on the same night that you would schedule a concert, maybe share the parking facilities. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
You could share the parking facilities and try to coordinate it in such a way that you're alternating nights in most cases. Maybe on some rare nights you could do two events at once. It could be done, perhaps. Maybe you borrow the Rams Stadium for some parking if it's that close. I don't know. It's such an interesting thought. But that's probably my look at it. If Ballmer were to successfully purchase the Forum would probably be just designated for concerts. Well, it's already doing that. But what I mean is that they would kind of treat it like the Felt Forum, but just a really big Felt Forum. I like how it's being called the Felt Forum. But the actual, the big forum, the Fabulous Forum, could be the Felt Forum. And then the basketball arena could be the main building, which also would do concerts. Like whenever the Clippers aren't playing or when they're on the road, they can do concerts there too.
Yeah, no, no. I love the boldness of this move, though. I really do. I think Ballmer's like, he's that brash personality that the Clippers need, and he's excited about his team. And you know, he goes to games on the road with them. I think he was at the Hawks game that I went to earlier this year, and he loves it, and he doesn't, you know, I mean, they're always going to take a backseat to the Lakers, and they're, you know, the fans are always going to be outnumbered. I don't know, 4-1, whatever you, I mean, maybe more than that,
I think
maybe 10-1. I don't know, but at least he's, yeah, you know, he's making big moves, and yeah, they're not a joke anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And I think as of right now, this is fact, the Clippers have the upper hand on the Lakers head to head. They've won twice in two games that they've played against one another. Game number three is coming up over the weekend, and that will be taking place at Staples on the Clippers' quote-unquote home floor. That should be a very interesting game, Chris. Very interesting. I'm very interested to see, will LeBron be healthy enough to play? Will Davis be healthy enough to play? And then beyond that, the Clippers have figured them out, and I'm very interested to see how they will respond, because they haven't really come within an arm's length of them so far. And I think you got to give a lot of credit to the way that Kawhi has attacked them. They really haven't figured out how to slow him down yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm thinking about that home floor thing and how big that is, and just, you know, the home game at Staples isn't a home game. Maybe if you moved out, you know, I'm still thinking about the Inglewood thing. But if you moved out there, you could have, I don't know.
You could have you have a good point, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is what you were getting at in the beginning, because you asked me what did you think about it being in Inglewood. But you may have highlighted something, whether you meant to or not, in that the community around that area is a big Laker contingent. I don't see too many Clipper fans in Inglewood. I mean, as you mentioned, the legacy of the forum, you know, in the 80s and 90s and even before that, was all Lakers. And a lot of the guys who still live there lived those days. So I still think that if the Lakers were to go to a Clipper game in Inglewood, in this new Clipper arena, there still would be a major majority of Laker fans in the building. But at least with this, you have the Clippers with a chance to grow their brand more so than they would be as a cohabitant with the Lakers at Staples Center.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's just, you know, even if you're outnumbered in the seats, it's still like the floor is still going to look, you know, no one's going to be like, oh, this is the Lakers building. This is the Clippers building now. Mm-hmm. And even though there might be a lot of Laker fans in the building, it's going to feel more like a home than Staples.
Yeah.
I just feel like Staples, and again, I've never been there, but it just feels like the Clippers are along for the ride.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would agree that if you're going to make this work, what you got to do is you've got to make this setting uniquely Clippers. Make it more of an intimate space. Don't do three levels of suites. Like, I don't think they would, but don't. Like, don't do that. Make it more, because the Ducks do this with Honda Center. And the Honda Center came first, but their building is really intimate compared to Staples Center, and it makes the experience a uniquely Anaheim Ducks experience. And I think that's what the Clippers need to do. They need to make their building distinctive enough and intimate enough to make the Clippers experience a special experience that's unique to them. Because the Lakers, think of it also like how you would consider Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. Yankee Stadium is bigger than life. It's huge. You have like 60,000 people in there. And the Yankees are a big thing. Everything's big. You got the big introductions, big voices, big players, big home run, well, the whole thing. Citi Field, it's more laid back. It's like friendlier. It's more it doesn't take itself so seriously. And the quarters are a little bit more intimate, although I think Citi Field's still a big pitcher's ballpark. So you have to do that with the Clippers' new building. Just make it a very specifically Clipper experience. If you can, make it more intimate. Make the fans sit on top of each other so it can be a more intimidating place to play. And I think they will really do big things for the Clipper fan base by situating themselves with that cozy of an atmosphere.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. And it's funny, too, because, I have friends, I grew up in New York, and I have a lot of friends who are Yankee and Met fans, and they've been to both buildings. I haven't been to either one yet. But I have friends who are Yankee fans who prefer Citi Field. They think it's a nicer experience overall. Like, it's easier to find stuff, and it just doesn't feel as – I mean, New Yankee Stadium just looks on TV, it looks just like this monolith,
right.
It's just this gigantic slab. And Citi Field kind of like has this kind of warm, sort of homey feel to it. I mean, it's, I don't know, all the brick and all that. And I think there's that definitely is an approach where you could, basketball rings are a little different, but you can find that little niche and capitalize on it, make it work.
There's no doubt. And I completely agree with your friend's assessment. I find that Citi Field is a better design building. It just has, you remember it. Like you're like, you've got the Pepsi porch and the right field side. And then you've got like the sharp angles and you've got the apple in the middle. Like there's a lot of character to that place, despite having only opened about 11 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
I haven't been up to New York in the summertime when it's been baseball season. Well, that's not true. I did go once, but I just didn't have time to go to a game.
I want to go to Citi Field one of these days. I haven't actually been in the building yet. I've just seen it from the outside, but I really would like to go. But I'm just going by what I see on TV. It's really nice.
Yeah, no, it looks great. I mean, it really does. Maybe I'll have to take the boys up there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What do we have left from that? We've covered a lot. Oh, the Sixers. Yeah. Well, things are starting to really
Lakers
come apart.
Tonight, too.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just saying they're playing your Lakers, the Sixers.
Oh, yeah. I thought they had the early lead, too. Let me check the score. Oh, not anymore. Whoops.
No. They're down now.
Anymore. I was so focused on the show tonight. I hadn't looked at the game. But it's going to be tough for them. It's going to be tough sledding until they get Ben Simmons back. The problem is, with the back injury, it's very, very ambiguous. And it's going to be tough to get him back 100% right away. And that's a significant hurdle for the Sixers. I know that Embiid has battled injuries off and on too, but I don't think that's as big of a problem. This is a big blow. I think that the Sixers need every bit of help they can get. They don't play well on the road to begin with. And without Simmons, I mean, what that had meant in the past is that it meant other people are getting off. You often would see Embiid have a big game when Simmons rests or when he's not playing. But if they don't have him long term, that's going to hurt him in the playoffs. So just a quick point on that before we log off tonight. Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not a Sixers fan, obviously, but I feel bad for them. We've been talking all season about can these two guys play together? And Simmons looked dynamite when Embiid was out for that stretch. I mean, he was amazing. And part of me thinks that they can't, but now here we are, and they've got neither of them, and Josh Richardson's out too, and it's just like they were in rough shape anyways, and this isn't helping. And Shake Milton's, he's had a nice little run in Simmons' absence. I think he had like 34 the other day against the Clippers. They're kind of falling apart at the seams. And what a surprising season for them. Cause I thought they were going to be almost unbeatable. And they've really, even at full strength, they've just been a huge disappointment. And
yeah.
And we don't know with Simmons, a back injury, that, I mean, for that sounds bad, Dave. I mean, yeah. You know, there's no clear timetable and or anything.
Yeah, but,
I mean, he played one game since the All-Star break. He played like 5 minutes against the Bucks. I think it was against the Bucks. Yeah. It was the second game after the break and played 5 minutes, and then we haven't seen him since. And they've been kind of tight-lipped about what's going on there. And the Sixers, just a very, very disappointing season as we enter the home stretch here and head towards the playoffs. I mean, there's still going to be a playoff team.
Yeah.
But can they get these guys back and get them healthy in time?
I mean, I think any way you slice it, it's been a big, as you said, a big disappointment for this team. We thought they'd be cruising to a top three seed, and they are not close. They are 9-22 away from home, and that is a big part of the reason. They just haven't really clicked. And I mean, we don't have enough time tonight to really get into why things aren't clicking with them, but that would be a good teaser for next week's show. It just hasn't really been a fit. Like, these guys don't seem to have... Like you said, like we were saying, it takes somebody else sitting out due to injury for someone else to go off. So they just haven't worked out how to play together to maximize the talents of everybody on that team. Just seems like an odd fit of different players. A lot of them need the basketball a lot. Simmons, Embiid, Harris. Would you say Horford's in that group too? Because, I mean, Horford's just a good player, period, but...
Yeah, he's lost a step, though. From what I've seen of him, he does not look like the same guy he was with Boston last few years. And that's going to be rough, Dave, because the Harrison-Horford contracts are, man, those are difficult.
Yeah.
Because, I they're making just huge money, and they can be tough to move. And it's funny, you know, you think about the Sixers, and you think about trust the process. And really, all they have left from that whole thing, you know, where they were tanking every year, is Simmons and Embiid, and people think they can't play together. So one of them's going to be gone.
Yep.
I would bet one of them's gone after this season.
After this season?
Assuming they don't win the title.
Wow. Yeah. After this season. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Is that because the contracts are up? Is that because the contracts are up, or just because...
Contracts are up. They're both signed to big contracts, but just because they're not a really good fit.
Yeah.
Because with Embiid, you'd like your other player to, because they just kind of clog the middle for each other. And you'd like Simmons to be a better shooter, and he's just not that. And it doesn't seem like he's improving in that regard. And then, what else are you going to do with this team? I mean, it's not like you're not going to get like a great draft pick. They have all these huge contracts, Horford and Harris and Simmons and Embiid. Someone's got, you know, if you want to make a change, it's got to be one of the two main names. It's got to be Embiid or Simmons. So I don't know. It would not shock me if they pull off Elton Brand. He's been aggressive, and he's been a wheeler dealer since he took over.
Let me ask this interesting follow-up to that. If you were to make a call between the two, which one are you moving?
I would probably move Embiid.
Yeah.
But it depends on Simmons' back. This back injury thing is scary, though. Yeah. I don't know. If he comes back and he's healthy and he plays well in the playoffs, I would say Embiid, because the center is not – just, it's not that critical a position anymore. Mm-hmm. And Embiid is like, I mean, they both get injured, but Embiid is he just seems like he's out of shape a lot of the times. And you could build a nice team with almost like a Giannis type roster construction, where you have Simmons playing point and controlling the ball a lot, and then put a bunch of shooters around him, and he's kind of I'll tell you what, it's almost like the Rockets in a way with Westbrook, because Westbrook is just slashing to the rim every single time and taking out the big guy on the team. Simmons could do the same thing. And you could build like a really interesting team with Simmons, but Embiid just kind of gets in the way. So
you're right.
It all depends on the health of his back. I mean, you may not be able to trade him. So,
ooh, boy, that's a very good call. Like, that back injury is going to decide the future of the franchise.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Scary to see that in a guy young, because I remember when Bird had the back injury.
That was it.
That was it.
That was it.
That was it. That. It was game over. I mean, he was just never the same, and he retired after maybe a year, year and a half. So, So you hate to see it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's very tough. I mean, we've seen it take down numerous athletes over the years. Great example there with Larry Legend taken down by it. So with that, we close it up. I will leave you this note, folks. The Warriors are about to beat the Denver Nuggets in Denver tonight. That is as big a surprise as anything else we've had this week. What a nutty loss for the Nuggets. I have no explanation for it.
Yeah, I've been watching that game, but
just see the score and I'm like, what happened?
I don't know. The Nuggets have been so up and down lately, and I mean they're second seed in the West, so they should be fine. But this is a game you expect them to win.
Yeah,
getting smoked.
Yeah, I mean, this is not. I think it was even bigger, an even bigger margin than I already reported earlier in the game. And as of now, it's 16 points. It's like, wow. I don't know. I don't know, Chris. They needed guard help at the deadline. They really didn't do anything about it. If anything, they weakened the team by trading some of their better bench players. It's a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely the Malik Beasley thing. Beasley's taken off since he's gone to Minnesota. And he's been putting up quite crazy numbers. I feel like these teams, like you're seeing a lot of upsets. I feel like these playoff teams, like sometimes they get into the last quarter of the season and they're tired, and you know, maybe the injuries are kind of stacking up a little bit, and so you know you're prone to see more upsets like this at this point of the season.
Yep. So one that we'll keep following up on all these teams, jostling for the playoff standings and seedings. But until then, we say goodnight. And Chris, thank you again for coming on, and I really appreciate the late hour. And hope you have a wonderful week, and enjoy the rest of the basketball the rest of the way, too. We should have an interesting month coming up as we decide these playoff seedings.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Dave. Pleasure was all mine. No worries about the time. It was great. Awesome. I enjoyed this.
All right, man. Well, take it easy. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, buddy. That's Chris in Georgia, and that's our show tonight. We hope you enjoyed all of the conversation. The NBA Report, once again brought to you by Dave in the City. We come to you every Tuesday at this time, or Wednesday sometimes. And we hope to be back again next week. We appreciate your listenership. I'm Dave Medina. You can find our show on the web at ditcow.com. We're on Twitter at ditcow. And you can look for us on Apple Podcasts at Dave in the City Out West. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time.